Okay, gute Woche. Sorry. Okay, we'll start Be'ezos Hashem. Chavis Halvavis. We're in Shara Bitochen. We're in Shara Bitochen. Still in the Psicha. Umehen, there are a number of paragraphs that start Umehen. The third Umehen from the last, okay, toward the end of the Psicha. Toward the end of the Psicha, we have a few paragraphs that start Umehen.
From
362. 362, right? Umehen Menuchas
HaNefesh?
Yeah. Okay. Page 362 in the English. Yashar Koyach. Okay. So the Chavos Halvavos here, what we're up to now, is in the middle of describing the material benefits of Bitachon. Now, it's interesting to note, because here is really where he's touching on the discussion of where do you draw the line of Hishtadlus. And we often approach that kind of like as a question in the Hilchas Bitachon, where is there too much Hishtadlus? He's putting this into the category of the material benefits of Bitachon. The material benefits of Bitachon, because when you have proper Bitachon, then you are able to just drop certain things and enjoy the benefits of dropping those things while knowing that you're doing the right thing. So what did we see last week? Last week we saw travel. A person can't get Parnassa close by. The only opportunity he has is to travel. He says he'll draw the line there. And as we discussed last week, right now we're getting more the concept than the bottom line, because the discussion of travel is obviously different today than it was in earlier times. In earlier times, travel meant weeks and months away in very, 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 very arduous trips. But we'll move on and we'll see that the concept. So here, Umehen. Some of the benefits are Menuchas HaNefesh VaGuf Min HaMasim HaKoshim. But you know, I want to first just frame this, what we're about to see now. And the point is that he's going to say that, yes, there are areas where you will draw the line of Hishtadlus. You'll say, my Hishtadlus does not extend to this. If the understanding is that whether you'll have money or not just depends directly on your Hishtadlus, then you never really have that luxury, because if you don't do this, you won't have money. And if you do it, and Hashem wants you to have money. The point here is that Hishtadlus is, we do it because it's something that Hashem wants us to do. And it's part of His plan for providing us with what He wants to provide us with. In those situations where Hashem says, here, I'm absolving your Hishtadlus, then He's saying, now my plan for you will play out without your involvement. Either I'll provide for you from somewhere else, or what I want for you now is to go through a period of a struggle. But you know that this is how Hashem planned it out, and it's not a matter of, well, is it because I'm neglecting my responsibilities? So therefore, what we'll see now is that Hishtadlus is expected of us, yet it is not number one on the list. It's not number one on our priority list as those of us who are living the life that Hashem wants us to live, as we'll see soon. Higher on the priority list are, well, first of all, I won't necessarily list it in the correct order now, more in the order that he presents it. Your health, your moral standards, your family involvement, these are things that may come before your duty of Hishtadlus. When you have a form of Hishtadlus that is in line with these things, you know, it keeps you, you're able to function healthily, you're able to maintain a normal family situation, you're able to keep up your spiritual efforts in the way that it should be. You're able to daven and learn like a mensch. You're able to have a program of the other things that need to be going on in life. And you also have a form of ishtadlus that will keep you busy, productive, and not relying on miracles. Then it's a duty. It's a duty. But it is not an all overriding duty. Just as we understand that it doesn't override Shmiras Shabbos, so it gets a little more refined than that also. It also doesn't override, let's say we're talking in terms of a man, it doesn't override three tefillas a day like a mensch. It doesn't override having time for a minimal, an acceptable learning regimen, however we'll define that. I'm not getting into that now. It doesn't override having a normal family setup, and it doesn't override your health. It doesn't override your menuchas and nefesh to a full extent. So let's see how the Chodesh Avavos puts it down. And again, what he's saying is the benefit of the Baal Bitachon is that when something does come up that is going to completely compromise his health, or will throw him into levels of stress that are going to make him oismich, right? So here this person has the luxury of simply saying, no, this is the only thing available to me now. I understand that Hashem is exempting me, and I'm going to not approach it. I'm going to confidently drop it. I'm going to confidently not take advantage of it and wait to see what Hashem has in mind here. I don't have to worry that I'm neglecting my duty. Either Hashem, you know, I'm going to refuse this job offer and something much better is going to come up a few hours later or a day later. Or Hashem might be putting me through a challenge now in the realm of Parnassus. But he does not expect me to take up this opportunity. So let's see how he puts it down. So, question.
So in terms of Shabbos, you know, that's an individual can work on his own mitzvah. And his own emunah, and you know, say, this is my little first thoughts. But you know, we have cases where a man has decided this is not, I cannot do this, and the wife, the family are crying with, I mean, let's not go to the hunger part of that. You know, somebody is upset. Somebody feels like he's having it. So there's also that balance.
Right. So the question is, what happens if a person reaches such a situation? It's coming at the expense of others. The person decides this is not an ishtadlus that I can do, and this is going to cause his family to go through a difficult time because he's not going to bringing in income right now. So here, let's break it down a little bit more. Let's say, again, you have the case of the guy. We'll talk right now in extreme terms just to bring out the point and understand how it gets a little more fine. But let's say you have the guy. He is, well, basically has my build. Okay, skinny guy, physical strength is just not his strong point. And he's trying to find a good office job. Maybe he's an accountant or something like that. And he gets an offer. He gets an offer to work for a moving company. He's seen those guys. These are guys that are scary to be around, right? These guys are human refrigerators. And that's where they can pile up on their back. Who knows how many tons of stuff. Now this guy knows he's going to go and do that and be schlepping, be schlepping closets and fridges for 10 hours a day. It's going to break him apart. We gave him a better example the other week. He's invited to come work in a coal mine, right? He just doesn't have the physical constitution for that. And yes, he knows that very soon he's going to be sick, right? Physically disabled, etc., right? What's his family going to gain from that? So the truth is that we're talking about situation, or take another case, right? The guy is offered a job where, again, things are tough at home right now. He's offered a job, like we said, what might be a contemporary example of the traveling. I knew somebody who was offered a job as a mashgiach. You go for stints of a few months at a time, right? And for his family, it just won't work. His wife cannot get through the day-to-day without her husband at the bedtime slot, at the whatever. Can't. What will happen at home? They'll have money. His wife will be falling apart. everything with the kids will be falling apart in school and everywhere else, but they're going to have the money they need. They won't have that stress, right? He's going to come home to find a dysfunctional home, kids who are struggling in all levels, right? And a wife who's a complete case, right? So here we say, if he refuses the job, the family's going to be struggling. If he takes the job, also the family will be struggling. So this is where we say that in a chanami, sometimes, certainly, when you're making that cheshbon, you do have to make the cheshbon of me, my family, but you're putting it all together. Should I be putting myself into a situation? Let's say a guy is offered a job where, you know what? You go and commit suicide, and we're going to provide a very, very fat insurance company. Okay, I'll provide for your family for the next 50 years. That's not ishtatlis he has to do. He says, no, my family will have to suffer the privation right now. I'm not going to sign on. I'm not going to take a suicide mission. I'm not going to volunteer as a kamikaze pilot, even if it will provide parnasa berevach. So these are obviously extreme cases, but the point being that when we talk about a person suffering privation or his family suffering privation, that is still might be Hashem's plan. And not everything, it's not necessarily that whatever it is that comes up comes before that. It's true, a person can't be selfish. A person certainly has to, when we're talking about figuring out the equation, it's not just what works for me, but it's certainly taking into account the whole picture. But still, even after saying that, hishtadlus is still not consideration number one. It still comes back to that a person's health, a person's moral standards, a person's family situation may come before the hishtadlus. Of course, there will be many situations where the call is tough. Right? There's no way of laying down now precise guidelines for every situation. But what we're doing now is, what we are doing, is introducing the factors that should and could be involved. Sometimes people are wrapped up in a situation. It happens a lot of times when a person is wrapped up in a particular difficulty, so their mind is full of that difficulty and they're not considering anything else. And it's only, do I have a way out of this? I'm going to take it because this is what I have to do, regardless of wherever else that might lead him. So what we're doing now is we are throwing into the equation other factors that have to be taken into consideration. When will which override which? That will just boil down to the individual situation. This is one of those areas where people are desperate fighting. I know the feeling too. Can we just have very, very clear guidelines? The answer is no. There's no way of laying down very, very clear guidelines. On the other hand, it is important to realize that the mysterious, vague parsha that people make out of it, it also doesn't have to quite be that way. There can be broad strokes in terms of guidelines, even if we leave them as question marks, right? Should I take this job? So the answer will be, should you take this job? I can give you 5 questions to consider. That's the answer. Right? You want a more specific answer? Sorry. That's part of the struggle of Olam, part of the challenge of Olam Hazeh, part of the challenge of living a life of Avodas Hashem, and even of not living a life of Avodas Hashem, but certainly living a life of Avodas Hashem, is that yes, often there are question marks, and dealing with those question marks and doing your best in resolving them is all a part of the purpose. So yeah, some of those question marks will be, again, the question is, should I take this job? So the answer is, here's the answer, clear cut. How will it affect your health? How will it affect your family situation? How will it affect your stress level? How will it affect your moral standards? How will it affect your davening? How will it affect your learning? Well, this it'll affect this. Okay, so yeah, now you have to sit down, put it all together, and at least, even sometimes when you just consider these questions, the clarity already comes. Sometimes, sometimes not. If it's still unclear at the end of the day, okay. So maybe, yeah, you'll sit down together with your spouse, put your heads together. You might consult with others. But there may be situations where it isn't 100% clear. But the point that we want to make is that it also shouldn't be 100% clear that the ishtadlis consideration overrides all, do that, and if everything else falls apart, what can we do? Okay. So now let's read it how the Chovas HaVavos puts it down. So some of the benefits will be of having this bitachon. And again, I just want to re-stress that sometimes by giving up the opportunity, when you've reached a conscientious understanding that this is not what Hashem will want from you now, it's with the bitachon that something else will come, but also with the bitachon that, yes, perhaps Hashem is putting our family through a struggle now. Sometimes there is such a thing as that too. Perhaps Hashem, sometimes you have a situation where a person is putting that struggle without any opportunity that he's offered to turn down, right? That is sometimes things that families will go through. And we come back to the bitachon issue of, okay, this is tough. This is what Hashem wants from me now. Easy to say, I know. Easy to say, but you know what? Like I keep stressing, part of the purpose of this shir is to say it when it's easy in order to equip ourselves with the kelim we might need to deal with it when chalila were put to the test, and we shouldn't be. We can all daven that having that clarity and having that sense of bitachon, Hashem will say, okay, you have it clear enough. I don't need to put you through the grind. But if he does, we want to be in position to respond to it in the way that will be best for our relationship toward him and best for our own neshama. Question?
Yeah, look. I just, sometimes maybe the struggle is you have to do, I look at the young girls coming out and the amount they pay for any job here is so low. But you have to really work and you have to work many hours and it's tiring. Most girls are, my daughter's a teacher, for example. And then you have all the homework to do at night and the tests and the this and the that. And you don't make a lot of money and it's exhausting. And there's no other opportunities that are going to come her way that are going to be provide her rest because that's what they offer and that's what it is. I don't think she could, it's very clear if the job's going to cause you to work on Shabbos or be in an insidious environment or there's very clear lines, but there's also jobs that are perfectly suitable, but they totally exhaust you. But that's what's available.
The question is, tell me if I have the question right. Sometimes this concept that we're discussing is clear. Sometimes it's very clear that here, this job is going to conflict with Shmirah Shabbos. Straightforward. The job description is make a chalent on Friday morning, on Shabbos morning, right? And then it's clear cut that Shabbos is not top priority. Keeping Shabbos comes first. Very nice. Then it's clear cut. There are also situations where it's clear cut in other realms, right? Tell a person here, take this job. This is a job that if you, Halila, take this job. This is a job that keep it at 18 months and by then you're guaranteed to have cancer. Okay. This is also something we see very clearly. Health comes first, right? There are situations where we see clearly that there's something else that comes first. And we're also stressing, and here's where it gets confusing, that sometimes just having a life of complete stress, and this is talking where it gets confusing because you're pointing out, very often the classic job is something that is just very stressful. And here, Anochaname, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is. Where do you say that a lot of today's reality is a stressed reality? And there's no running away from that to an extent. And Adarabi, you know, we might say that part of the challenge is, yes, if we want to completely avoid a stressed reality, I don't know if that's Shaykh Bichlal. Right? So when we're talking about, when I say, having peace of mind comes first, I mean peace of mind within a lot of stress. That's just the mystic way of approaching things today. And you know what? Yeah, part of our challenge is to deal with stresses also. I'll get to that in a moment, Bli Nedar. But true, we can't make it so clear cut. Hey, if it's going to provide stress, don't do it. Because you know what then? Just try to stay at the age of 12, even 12 not, 12 because of stresses. Try to stay at the age of 5, you have a stress-free life, right? You can't run away from the stresses. But what we mean to say is be aware of that also as a factor. Sometimes be aware that there's such a concept as it's stressful. Okay, you know, that just might be the reality. It might be stressful this way, it might be stressful that way. But be aware of the reality of, to be able to at least raise the question mark, are the stress levels reaching a point where we have to question, we have to reevaluate? There is such a thing, that the stress levels reach a place where, yes, you have to reevaluate and consider, perhaps yes, making a sweeping change. There is such a thing. But again, these are question marks. I don't think we'll be able to get from the question mark to the period when it's not a clear-cut reality that we're dealing with.
Right.
Now,
the text is just—it's just.
Chaim Salvador states things in a very clear-cut, stark right. kind of way, and that's right.
It's
part of why
there's no ambiguity, and it doesn't account for the stress of daily living.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's why we're learning Chaim Salvador. So we have to realize that we are learning a Rishayim. When we're learning Rishayim, we need a lot of processing to bring it to us in our door. Chaim Salvador is not easy. Open up a Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yoina, and just start seeing the standards there. You just kind of so yes, when we're learning Rishayim, we do it with the understanding that they are laying things down in a very stark, clear-cut kind of way. And to an extent, it's like we say, Rishonim Kimalachim, right? And we are trying to bring down the lessons that he was providing to Klal Yisrael and process them, filter them in a way that we can draw on them. Okay. Now we have a suggestion here, which I want to read it out. Just if you saw it in the chat, that's why we daven for Hashem to help us, to give us the strength and fortitude to deal with it all. That's really part of it, part of what we're talking about here. That is part of what we're talking about here. This brings me to a chashuva point. Right, we said that stress is a factor. On the other hand, we also understand that life being challenging is part of the purpose of life, right? We just had in the other week's parsha, right? Bikash Yaakov Leishav Bishalva. Bikash Yaakov Leishav Bishalva. Yaakov was looking for a tranquil existence. He thought, after 21 years of living in Lavan's house, it wasn't Pashit, right? Finally, he's back in Eretz Yisrael with his family, brought his whole family back to his homeland. He's settling down. Now he's moving into the calmer years. Oh, no. That was when the whole new parsha started. His last 17 years of his life, when he was living in Mitzrayim, were actually the calmest, materially best years of his life. That's what Medrash tells us. After, Hashem said, wait. There's still more greatness to be gained by some more stress. That was basically the message to him. The grind of raising a big family under Lavan was something very, very, very intense. And it brought Yaakov to very, very great levels, dealing with the challenges, the nonstop challenges that provided him with. And he thought, okay, I just want to illustrate that. Yaakov Avinu, before he went to Lavan's house, he spent 14 years in Yeshiva Hashem Ve'eva. 14 years in Yeshiva Hashem Ve'eva is, just thinking about that, is like it's a paradise for the spiritually minded person. Right? And he reached very, very high levels there. He left there and he had his dream with the ladder. What was that? It was a nevuah, right? He reached, to achieve nevuah, you have to be on a very, very high level. And his 14 years of that focus, single-minded focus, and where he was growing for those 14 years, brought into that level of nevuah, and he had a very, very profound fundamental nevuah in his dream. I'm stressing the words in his dream. Right? This was a nevuah of a dream. Then he went into the grind. After 14 years in that spiritual oasis, right? Spiritual paradise, he went into the grind, mamish, the thick of the stresses of Olam Hazeh, right? Very, very grounded avoda, right? Out with the sheep, which he describes. Don't picture the being out with the sheep as, you know, that idyllic reality, sitting with the sheep all day. He describes it later, right? Remember how he describes it? When he says, right? I was consumed by the cold in the winter and by the heat in the summer, and I was completely sleep deprived. And at the same time, he's raising a family. This was his dream, right? But one child after the other, many children, each one with their parishes. There's so much going on, right? Throughout this period, and he's dealing with love on the whole time. Every day, right? they had an arrangement in place. Oh, no, that wasn't the arrangement. It was completely different, right? He's busy contending with that and reconfiguring back and forth. He didn't have a nevuah this whole time. It was a chutzaretz. He didn't have a nevuah this whole time. And he's mamish in the trenches. Such a difference from those days at the Shtender in Yeshiva Shem Ve'eva, right? And finally, when he finishes it, he comes back to Eretz Yisrael. What happens? It's so short at the end of the parsha. At the end of Parshas Vayetze, you almost miss it. Vayivgu boy malachei elikim. You encounter malachei elikim. Vayikol Hashem al machanayim. You call that place machanayim because of the camps of malachim that he encountered there. And then you move on. Very, very short. It gets much less focused than the dream at the beginning of the parsha. But Avigdor Miller said you have to chap what happened there. That was again a nevuah. But this was a nevuah that he had when he was awake. A nevuah, when you're awake, is of a much higher level than a nevuah that you have in a dream. Which is actually saying that Yaakov Avinu's work in those 21 years of contending with the stresses of life, right? And remaining Yaakov Avinu despite it all, not allowing it to wear him down, brought him to a much higher level than he had been when he left the yeshiva of Shem Ve'eva. Just what? During those 21 years, he didn't get notification of it. But all of a sudden now, when there was a break in the action, right? There was a breathing space. There was a break in the action, and now Hashem showed him, look where you've reached. By what? By contending with the stresses of life. By contending with the stresses of life. Like Yaakov Avinu. So we have to appreciate it. We have to appreciate that challenges, struggles, a profound piece from the Tanya, where he says like this. I'm gonna try to put it into a very down to earth kind of terms, approaching it from a little bit of a different angle. This is how I heard Rav Shimshon Pinkus say this years before I actually saw it in the Tanya. Rav Shimshon Pinkus says it in much more practical terms. The Tanya says it in more elevated terms. But when I saw the Tanya, it suddenly hit me, wow, that's what he was saying. So I'll put it in his terms first, and then we'll back up. You may have heard me say this before, but what is the purpose of a mechitza? A mechitza and a shul. What is the purpose of a mechitza and a shul? They say the superficial answer is to keep the men and women separate. But if you really think about it, it's not true. Because what would happen if there were no mechitza? I'm talking about in a shul where you ought to be, not in a shul where you don't ought to be. But in a shul where you ought to be, what would happen if there were no mechitza? The women wouldn't come, right? If there was no mechitza, the women wouldn't come. So what's the mechitza there for? The mechitza there is there to enable the women to be there, or in other words, to enable the men and women to be in close proximity, whereas without a mechitza, that wouldn't be possible. It's to enable proximity that would otherwise be impossible, inappropriate, right? Person wants to sunbathe, right? Wants to get out, enjoy the warmth of the sun. But he can't handle the light. It's too bright. So what does he do? Puts on a pair of dark sunglasses. What's he doing? He's pushing the sun away, right? He's kind of like distancing the sun from himself so that he can approach the sun, right? Same concept. Sometimes you can't, without a screen, you can't get too close, right? Without those glasses, Okay, Rabbi Say, I'm sorry, but we stopped when I saw that we lost the connection. So I'll pick up from where we stopped.
Can I ask a question about Yakim?
Let me just put it off until we finish this point, and then we'll get to it later. So the point that the Tanya makes is that, and well, Rav Shimshon Pinkus puts it this way, and then you actually see it. He's bringing the Tanya to life, is that sometimes Hashem wants to draw so close, but it's too close without a mechitza. And that is where Hashem will put a, call it Yisurim. But it's interesting that when you look in the Tanya, he's not talking about Yisurim per se. He's talking about the intense stresses of life, which are sometimes like you just feel like, I just can't handle this. This is just too much. But what's actually going on is that Hashem is drawing extra close. You put a mechitza there, and now he's right there. Without the mechitza, Hashem would kiviyachol. I'm saying these words without understanding them exactly. I'm saying them anyways. It would be a bit further removed. The closeness would be a bit further. Now, Hashem puts down a mechitza, who's very, very close. For example, Shechina lamal min ha'shesef shel chele, the person who is ill, chas v'shalom, the Shechina is right there. So this can be explained from both directions. What's the cause and what's the effect? It can be both. Because the person is ill, Hashem comes to be extra close to him. But it can also go in the other direction. Hashem now wanted to draw especially close to this person. But there has to be a certain screen in between. But the term that the Tanya uses is iskasya, amad iskasya, the world of concealment. He says in that world, Hashem is much closer than the amad isgalia, where you simply see Hashem's good openly. The world where the good is concealed is actually a much closer, higher place. So when you're just seeing the challenges and you're contending, you should realize that this is Hashem right there offering you opportunity, whether to reach through those challenges to him or whether just in terms of responding to those challenges correctly. And therefore, on the one hand, it's like Maseiach Yesharim says, Hashavah mitzadecha v'yisur mitzadecha. Maseiach Yesharim says, every life circumstance is double-edged. Each one provides a nisayon. Wealth on the one hand, poverty on the other hand. Each one has its nisayonis. And nisayon, we stress this a lot of times, I hope this is already clear by now, we translate the word nisayon into opportunity. Test has a certain like b'dievet kind of connotation. But for us, the word nisayon means opportunity. A nisayon is Hashem providing you with an opportunity to succeed, to gain some added form of benefit, closeness to him, benefit for your neshama that you wouldn't necessarily get to otherwise. So here the Maseiach Yesharim also says, Hashalva mitzad echad v'yisurim mitzad echad. Tranquility on the one hand, and yisurim on the other hand. Now yisurim also has a strong connotation of misfortune. But the Maseiach Yesharim is contrasting that with shalva, when everything's just quiet. Meaning there's a spectrum. I don't want to like go on the route of kvetching by saying that, the ordinary stresses of life are yisurim, right? But on the other hand, they're not shalva. It provides us with the opportunity of non-shalva. It's not when Hashem throws us curveballs, which can take the form of what we might call ordinary life, intense stresses that don't quite make the grade of a misfortune, a tzara. But nevertheless, it's stressing, it's challenging. And the understanding that that is where in those stresses, and note also that Hashem, the default state when Hashem sets up, tells you how to set up your life, is one that's inviting a lot of stress, right? If our purpose was to be completely focused on meditating, contemplating Hashem's greatness, learning Torah, etc., the best setting for that would be the way other religions approach spirituality. Exactly. You go out into the forest, you don't create a family. You live a life of tranquility, of solitude, of meditation, There you can really achieve Hashem's will. There's a paradox here. Hashem tells you, I want to be learning Torah. I want you to be davening. I want you to be appreciating my greatness. And at the same time, I'm setting it up such that you can end up, right? Look, so many of us are making a lot more money than our counterparts in other parts of the world. But we're raising a family, Kanai Nahara, of many children. It's a lot of shit. And I want to stress here that Hashem says, this is the default. You set it up such. I'll then decide. I might decide that, no, you should have a quieter life when it comes to finding a shidduch, when it comes to having children, how many children, etc. Whatever it is, that is Hashem already deciding exactly the nature of your particular place. But we see that Hashem is telling us, we want your natural approach to be one that is inviting a very intense life. Right? That's the natural approach. I want you to marry. Marry already makes your life intense. Right? And then Hashem says, and I want you to strive to have children. I'll decide whether they should come or whether not, how many, at what rate, according to your very particular game plan that I have in mind for you. No two people ever had the exact same life circumstances, right? But Hashem says, but you approach it such that you're inviting as much stress as I'll pile onto you. That's what Hashem tells us to do. You go and invite as much stress as I'll pile onto you. And then when it comes, our approach is, okay, this is where Hashem wants us to connect in. This is where Hashem wants us to connect in. When we have those stresses and we're contending with them, and we say, it's very stressful. But you know what? This is how Hashem wanted it. So I turn to Hashem and say, you know what, Hashem? This is too much for me to handle on my own. And then hear Hashem responding, no problem. I'm in the picture. There's three shutfim in the family, right? There's the husband, there's the wife, and there's Hashem. And you know, acknowledging that sometimes things are over your head is itself the achievement. It's lowering your head. And we would like to feel like we're in absolute control. But Hashem tells us, you know what? Part of your growth is acknowledging when you're not. And lowering your head and saying, Hashem, I can't do it all. Ah, you realize that. Very good. That itself is a great form of growth and a great accomplishment. And the realization that, yes, it's about me trying to do what I can in terms of when there are stresses to enhance my bitachon that this is what's good for me. And to try as best as I can, that even when things are stressful, to continue relating as best as I can with patience and with a smile to the people around me. All of these things, Hashem says, this is the greatness that I envision for my people. It's not the greatness that's achieved in a life of solitude. Now, for some people, that is what Hashem envisioned. Hashem has a different game plan for everybody. And part of that game plan is defined by the family setting that Hashem set you up with, whether in terms of marriage, children, society, etc. All that, for some people, Hashem says, I do want you to have a more quiet life. That's where you'll achieve. But the point is for us to realize that, Mamash, like the Mesilas Yesharim said, Shalom on one side, absolute tranquility. Yisurim on the other side, and everything in between is all Nisayon, is all what defines our purpose in life. How do we get into all this? This is actually something of a tangent, but an important one. Sometimes the tangent is more important than the subject matter itself. The understanding that we are not looking. The stress factor is definitely a factor to consider when we are considering Hishtadlis, what Hishtadlis, where to draw the line of Hishtadlis. It's definitely a factor. On the other hand, and thank you for bringing this up, we do have to stress that the goal is not necessarily to ensure that my life will be stress-free. On the contrary, to appreciate that it is the stresses of life that provide us with all those opportunities for growth that Hashem is offering us. Now, shalva, like the Mesilas Yesharim says, is also an opportunity if you know how to utilize shalva properly, you know how to utilize tranquility properly. So you might say, so why didn't Hashem just give us all that opportunity? Well, we'll really utilize the shalva properly. But you have to appreciate that that would be very, very hard to do things, to really push ourselves to a pace that would be equal to what we could achieve through the stresses. Don't assume that we could do that. Sometimes you need, Hashem says, you think that this is the place you could go. I know that you're capable of so much more. And look, I'm going to pile on, challenge, 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 challenge. You're going to produce much more than you would have thought yourself capable of by contending with those challenges. After that, let me give you a week of Shavuot. You know, I was waiting for routine to resume, right? Routine resumes for a week. That's the pattern of life. You come to realize that routine resumes for a week, and then another 3 months of waiting for routine to resume, right? Hashem says, now I'll give you a window of shalva, half hour, okay? And now that you learned how to utilize what it means to really accomplish, when I pile on the challenges, see if you can handle that shalva right. See if you can handle that shalva right. I'll just end by saying, we'll tie it into to the parshiyos of this week. According to Rabbeinu Sanai Bishitz, that was really one of the purposes of the Shibud in Mitzrayim, the servitude of Mitzrayim, in preparing us to be an Am Hashem. When we think of, you know, set up a life of service of Hashem, okay, I do it at my pace, et cetera, et cetera. No, after you experience what it means to be a slave, that's the model. Now do it in the context of your service of Hashem, where there's all that meaning of connecting with Hashem, early inning Olam Haba through it, but refer back to that model. Having said that, of course, you do have to know how to give yourself the space you need. And if we leave that just as a confusing question mark, even if we were to elaborate, it would remain a confusing question mark. So we'll end with that. Now, you're going to ask a question.
Yeah, just along the same lines, when we think about growing through challenges and suffering, so when we say Yaakov Avinu, the 20 years he spent in Lava's house grew him more than the 14 years that he was in Yeshiva Chinchina. Did he have to, could he have grown? Was the growth because he was aware every moment that Hashem was giving him this growth, this opportunity? How much do we have to be aware in order to grab?
Oh, that's a question of a question. I'm going to repeat the question, but okay, anybody who wants to leave, feel free. We're finished, but I'm going to repeat this question. Anybody wants to stay on, stay on. The question. Myself. If, without consciously thinking in terms of growth, if the challenges of life do train me to soften my responses, I become a softer person, I become a more sensitive person, I have no choice. If I'm not going to be sensitive enough to my spouse's feelings, I'm going to be getting in trouble all the time. I don't want that kind of life. And therefore, I just naturally become more attuned. So here, you're growing. And those challenges are getting you places, even though you're not even thinking in those terms. Your midas are improving because of considerations of self-preservation. that is very worthwhile. Now, it goes from there to the full to the full end of the spectrum, is when a person is moving through life on a moment-to-moment basis thinking, how can I get the most out of this moment? Anything that comes up, someone says something to me, how can I respond in a way that will most please Hashem? Anytime someone provokes me, anytime someone gets mad at me, anytime I'm facing any kind of stress, a curveball comes my way, and will I respond? Oh, this is a curveball from Hashem. Hashem, I'm accepting it. I'm going to try to figure out what you want me to do with this. So yeah, a person who's living that way on a moment-to-moment basis, he's going to be getting the most out of the stresses. But there's so many degrees in between. It might be impossible for us to live that way on a moment-to-moment basis. We might miss three curveballs and hit the fourth. But you know what? We're hitting one out of every four curveballs. And without this life, we get a curveball once a week. Maybe hit it, maybe not. So this way, I'm missing a lot. I'm hitting a lot. They keep coming at me. I'm trying to do what I can. Some I'm missing. But you know what? Hashem is producing you at a high rate that you wouldn't think yourself capable of. So again, how much consciousness do you need? If you're applying yourself to it in a general way, in a conscientious way, you are getting the benefits of what that life is meant to produce. But the more you think in these terms, the more you'll be able to get out of it. But when we're talking about, again, a person putting himself onto the track of life that Hashem wants, and he's doing it because he understands that this is the life that Hashem wants for him. And he's on that track in a general way. He's getting swept along. So from there to getting the most out of it is the difference between millions and trillions. A person who's only making millions is not going to be a pauper. As long as you're not on the track of, if everything that comes your way, you're fighting, you're responding bitterly, and it's just a life full of barking at everybody who barks at you, barking at everybody who doesn't bark at you, and just griping and complaining about whatever does come your way, you might not be getting anything out of it. But do remember this, if you griped twice and then you said, hey, 1 minute, and then the next time you didn't, presumably that one time got you more profit than the two times that you lost. If you can then get it to a place of griping once and responding properly twice, you've doubled your profit. But this is the general answer to this question. And as far as the particulars go, ain la dava seif. But have we addressed it? Okay. Bukhim to you. Agut tevach raboisai. Yeshukoyach. Yeshukoyach. But often one, I'm sure we're not very much in some sort of